This is the Jim Inkster Show.
This is where Louisiana comes for information on the way home.
Intelligent talk for Louisiana.
This is where you hear the newsmakers, Louisiana personalities, celebrities, and the people who shape opinions.
Now, here's Jim Inkster.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being a part of our show. If you'd like to make your voice heard, this is your chance, 877-217-5757. Send us an email if you'd like to do it that way, jim@inkstershow.com. We're going to start with Mike Berto. He'll be our guest this hour, the chief economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana, 12 years, and he is the man who probably knows more about healthcare than anybody in our state, and his blog is straighttalkla.com. But you get to hear his melodious voice, and there is much to talk about since we visited with him a month ago. House lawmakers on Capitol Hill are planning on commiserating with the president in hopes of putting Humpty Dumpty back together. It was a few weeks ago that the president thought he had the votes in the Republican-dominated U.S. House, but it didn't turn out that way. And as a result, the plan to replace and repeal Obamacare went by the wayside, at least for now. But the vice president is meeting with the House Freedom Caucus. He did earlier this week. And there could be a new bill in the works, and we'll see what happens. And, Mike, I know you follow the political realm of this as well, and you've divided the House into three categories, the ones who are the contemporary Republicans.
Right, right.
The ones who are on the what might be considered the right flank of the party, the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
And those on the moderate side of the party who, for all intents, could in another life be Democrats.
If they lived in a different district, they might have to run as Democrats based on their political positions.
And what are those numbers?
Well, my breakdown, I think that with the 236 current members that are caucusing as Republicans, about 35 or 36 of them identified very closely with the Freedom Caucus when this bill was being negotiated. What we're talking about is the American Health Care Act, which was a bill that was introduced about a month ago, designed specifically to make pretty sweeping changes to the original Affordable Care Act. As if it couldn't get more confusing, we had the ACA and the AHCA, so we have to keep all the acronyms, you know, as straight as we can. Mm-hmm. In that process, what we found going on was the middle of the party, about 180, 185 of the 236, seemed content to go forward with the bill the way it was. They needed 216 or 217, depending on who showed up that day, to get the bill passed. And on the Freedom Caucus side, they seemed very dissatisfied that the bill really didn't address the things about the ACA that they didn't like. Part of the thing that's kind of hard to grasp about the ACA is it drew an enormous amount of authority away from the states and back to Washington. If you're talking about regulating health insurance markets, especially individual and small group markets. And so the Freedom Caucus guys seem very focused on getting some of that authority away from Washington. They talk about it all the time, and sending it back to the states. They were starting to negotiate with the president two Fridays ago, when the bill was on the floor of the House. And they were really working hard. But what happened was, as the administration would give in to the Freedom Caucus, mm-hmm. the guys on the other end of the party, the 16 or 18 that are what I consider potential Democrats, really depending on, you know, what district they're in, started to walk away from the bill. And so at the end of the day, they realized that they couldn't give in anymore on the right without losing the same number on the left. And it just got to the point where 216 was an impossibility, and they pulled the bill.
And like President Obama, President Trump, was receiving no help from the other side. So that makes it hard to make it happen unless you have a united front in your party. And in this case, the numbers, as you and others have broken them down, 185 moderate Republicans, 36 members of the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
That includes Mike Johnson, by the way, of Louisiana, the new one from the Northwest Louisiana area, and 16 who are recognized as almost Dems.
Yeah, that's
kind of
where I put it.
Rhinos.
So, right.
So you got to get 216 or 217 out of that number. So that means if you got all 36 of the Freedom Caucus plus 185 of the ones in the middle, you could get it done.
That's it. Yeah. And so, but there are certain members of the Freedom Caucus that, you know, said very clearly, and they've been saying this since day one, that they wouldn't settle for anything less than a full repeal. And there was the bill that was offered was certainly not a full repeal of the health care law.
So right now there are negotiations going on, and there is discussion that there could even be another vote this week. That would seem to be amazing, but could it happen?
I don't know. You know, I the article I wrote that's on Straight Talk, I called it the sudden death of the AHCA and the potential resurrection. And what's happening this week is they're having meetings, but nobody will commit to anything. I was listening to the radio coming, driving up from New Orleans this morning, and Speaker Ryan was on. They were interviewing him about the bill, and he was very cagey. He wouldn't commit to any dates or any time frame or any schedule. He just reiterated that they were making progress, that it was an ongoing process, it's not dead, and that they were bringing more people into the fold. But that's as specific as he would get today.
Well, the conventional wisdom is that since the vice president, who was once a member of the right flank himself, Mike Pence, is talking with the Freedom Caucus, that the new bill will be more conservative than the previous one. That's the consensus. Is that a likelihood?
I don't know. There are some parts of it that our business clients, for example, in Louisiana, were very excited because one of the things offered up in the original bill was the complete repeal of the fines associated with the employer mandate. And 90% of Blue Cross's customers are business clients, people who get insurance through their job. And that fine itself supports a huge regulatory structure that causes those businesses to jump through an awful lot of hoops. And so if that fine itself was removed, then their flexibility in how they offer coverage and what they do would be vastly improved. So I fully expect that repeal of the employer mandate penalty to show its head again going forward on the employer side. On the individual side, I don't think the argument's over. They certainly haven't let go of trying to restructure Medicaid. And you got to wonder, can you really do a restructure of Medicaid and the individual market at the same time? It just seems like an awfully ambitious thing to try.
877-217-5757 is your number. And Mike Berto is our guest, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield. What happens to Obamacare? Right now it remains the law of the land. Is that going to change or will it remain the same? We'll talk more when we return in 2 minutes on the Louisiana Radio Network.
Politics junkie?
It's not just the debate.
You're in the right place.
It's how the debate is translated to people.
The Jim Inkster Show.
On the Louisiana Radio Network.
This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us. 877-217-5757. Your toll-free number from Lake Providence to Lake Pontchartrain. Emily Gunn and Hailey Holloway producing. And our guest is Mike Berto, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield. And the repeal and replacement of Obamacare didn't go quite the way the president thought it would. He said it would be easy. Well, as we found out, it's not so easy when you're running the show with two parties that are at odds with each other, and there are factions within each party. And look out, nothing happened thus far, but the president is still plowing away, and there may actually be a bill that will clear the House. We'll see. 877-217-5757 is your number. Today, Mike Berto made it back to the studio here in Baton Rouge after visiting with a delegation from Brazil.
It was a delightful morning. I was invited to sit in at the Biotechnology Center down in New Orleans. There was a trade delegation and a group of medical professionals, people who run hospitals and set policy for healthcare in the Brazilian market. And you can imagine the challenges they face. Zika hit them pretty hard. They have about 120 million people. Only about a third of them can afford any sort of private insurance. 70% of the population is basically on a really strong primary care government plan. And they shared a lot of their stories with us, some of their challenges Dr. Rebecca Gee from LDH was there, and it was really a very fulfilling morning. It was encouraging to me to see Louisiana on the forefront of dealing with, of learning about how other countries get things done that have very similar challenges to us, climate-wise, culture-wise. Brazil is a pretty good match, a pretty good analog for Louisiana in many ways. A very strong performance all the way around.
It is interesting, though, that in a country like Brazil, 70% are on public health care because they can't pay for it, right?
Right. Their poverty level is pretty dramatically higher than ours.
And yet their life expectancy, I'm trying to pull it up right now, I would think is not that much different than the United States of America.
Maybe not. You know, they probably don't have access to as many drive-through calories as we do.
Yeah,
that would be my first guess.
We don't take care of ourselves. Yeah. And I guess it comes down, we have access to great health care.
Sure.
And if you have means, you have better access than those without. But even with the access, we just don't treat ourselves very well, do we?
You know, I'm hardly one to propound on the beauties of good health. I'm a bit of a metabolic train wreck myself. But in reality, what we've learned over the last few years, and one of the things I love about working for Blue Cross is we're really pushing this so hard, is that the key to a lifelong relationship with good health starts with a relationship with a primary care physician, someone who at, you know, a midpoint in your life in your 30s or 40s can start monitoring the things that drive most of healthcare costs: blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol. Sorry if I sound like a broken record.
Uh-huh.
But those are the kind of things that Brazil is doing very well. They have a strong base of primary care, and they've taught people how to use those relationships and how to take advantage of them. Now, because they may have a shortage of primary care assets, you know, we discovered that they may have longer waiting periods than we do to get in to see a doctor. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the people understand that that's the place to go for their long-term needs. They don't have this giant emergency room problem that we have, where people go to the emergency room for many different and sometimes inappropriate reasons. So it was just a really strong learning experience for me about how another country is doing it with less resources per person, dramatically less than we have here.
Well, in the United States, the average life expectancy right now is listed at 78.86. Hawaii, the highest, 81.3.
Sure.
Mississippi, the lowest, 74.9. And only Mississippi, West Virginia, and Alabama have lower life expectancy than does Louisiana at 75.7. So as a state, we're about 6 years behind Hawaii, and we're 3 years behind the national average.
Wow. Did you find Brazil in there?
Well, I tell you what, we're going to find Brazil before
before
list of countries. I think I have found the hidden amount. 78.8, we know from the United States.
Yep.
And Japan, by the way, has the highest, 83.7.
Sure.
83.7, and they smoke like a chimney in Japan. How do they live to be 84 years old?
I don't think that they have as strong a relationship with drive-through windows and red meat as we do. That's just a suspicion I have. I could be totally wrong about that. And they sure do walk a lot. Every video I see of, you know, the big cities in Japan, there nobody's driving because the traffic is just unbelievable.
Brazil, by the way, 75.2.
Okay,
so
that's
they're
pretty close.
They're about what Louisiana
that's
is.
Just
you pinned it.
Yeah, we're
right there with Brazil.
Fascinating.
But they rank 66th in the world, and the United States, of course, is way behind other countries, countries that you would not think. The United States is 31st, behind places like Costa Rica and Chile.
I have a theory about about longevity, and it relates to the size of your freezer. So there, believe me, this is purely anecdotal at this point. I'm studying it, but I haven't really turned it into what I would call research yet. But yeah, it goes like this. The larger and the more freezers you own, the less your life expectancy is going to be. the smaller freezer you own and the fewer of them, the longer you're going to live. And why do I say that? Well, if you've ever been to London or Paris or Rome, we rented apartments, you know, and right. stay there. All of the places there have tiny little refrigerators and tiny little freezers. And this struck me as odd at first until I realized that everybody shops for what they're going to cook that day, that day. And so just about every meal they eat is fresh food, vegetables and meat, and it's simple. We love our frozen food, which mm-hmm. we buy in great quantities because, you know, we have the big box stores and we go and get what we want and we throw them in the freezer. And then we sit on them. We keep them for weeks and weeks so that we don't have to go to the market so often. We live a lot more spread out than the people in the city. And those frozen foods typically have enormous amounts of sodium in them and all sorts of other things that aren't really that good for you. So like I said, it's just a theory at this point, but it's something I've been ruminating on over the last few years. Will your freezer, the number of mm-hmm. freezers you have and the size of it, correlate to your life expectancy?
Well, the U.S. is 79.3, according to this report. The other one had it a little bit higher, but not much. And it is 0.2% ahead of number 32, Cuba.
Wow.
Cuba.
Yeah.
We'll be back after this time out on the Louisiana Radio Network.
The Jim Inkster Show can be heard locally on great radio stations throughout the state and beyond, like Talk 107.3 in Baton Rouge, KTIB 640 AM in Thibodaux, and KASO AM 1240 in Shreveport, Minden.
This is the Jim Inkster Show on the Louisiana Radio Network.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Emily Gunn and Hailey Holloway producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Mike Berto, Blue Cross Blue Shield chief healthcare economist, is with us. The man who knows healthcare like nobody else in our state. StraightTalkLA.com is his blog, and he blogs frequently about what's going on, and this is a changing landscape. As we know, a few weeks ago, a bid by the president and the Republican hierarchy in the U.S. House to repeal and replace Obamacare, it fell short. Needed 217 or 18 votes, didn't get it. So as a result, the landscape remains the same with Obamacare, the law of the land. What do you think? 877-217-5757. And who is to blame? The president has pointed fingers at Democrats who didn't give him any votes, and at the Freedom Caucus and his own party, who he says are too rigid to negotiate. So who is to blame for the fact that Obamacare, which was supposed to be an easy fix, according to the president, has not been anything like that? And where do we go from here? Mike Berto, I would imagine at the headquarters of Blue Cross Blue Shield, you're thinking, my goodness, what's going to happen?
You know, it's important to us when you're tasked with paying for the health care for over a million people here in the state. What you need more than anything else is a playing field that's level, that you can see, that you can understand and maybe predict out a year or two or three. It's unimaginably disruptive when things change dramatically in a short period of time when you're trying to help that many people finance their health care. So, for example, we know that in the individual marketplace, the people there who need the most assistance, the lower-income folks, mm-hmm. are very heavily dependent on what are called cost-sharing reductions, which is simply a subsidy that helps cover the cost of their deductibles and their co-pays and their co-insurance. It's kind of a quirk in the design of the ACA that the lowest income folks are steered into health plans by the federal regulations that have deductibles around $2,000 or $2,500 a year. And those folks may be single folks making $18,000 a year. Where are they going to get $2,500 for a deductible? The solution to that problem, as proposed in the ACA, was let's create a second layer of federal assistance that buys down those deductibles and copays for those very low income folks so they can use their insurance. Originally, that was supposed to be funded by Congress. Congress, 4 years ago, zeroed that line item in the budget and said, we won't pay it. And so under President Obama, they had figured out a way within the administration to fund the cost-sharing reductions, which are critical to the health insurance of 6 million people. 6 million people receiving that assistance. And so Congress was took that as an affront to their budget authority, and so they sued the White House under the Obama administration, and they had a lawsuit, and Congress won. So at that point, the judge said, you know, you guys can see if you can work this thing out, and we'll issue a stay. But since that judgment, maybe 6-8 months ago to today, the administration, the president, is still funding those cost-sharing reductions. President Trump's administration is still funding that benefit. Congress is still not funding it. But if it's the funding is removed, this is so wonky, I'm sorry, insurance companies have to come up with the money. And the only way to do that is by raising premiums again. So what we would like to see is Congress say, yes, we're going to fund it, or the White House say, yes, we're going to fund it, we're going to let the lawsuit go by the wayside, so that we know what to price insurance for in 2018. Because we have to make all of those decisions very soon, very soon.
Mm-hmm. What does this do to the average consumer, let's say of a moderate means, who's waiting on the sidelines, may actually benefit to some degree from Obamacare, mm-hmm. and yet not knowing what the heck's going to happen?
Well, one of the unintended consequences, I think, of the ACA is it's created a clear dichotomy in the individual marketplace. So when people go to buy their own health insurance, there's one group that's very heavily subsidized, and so they're immune to rate increases. It doesn't matter if the insurance is $200 or $1,000 a month. Their share is based on their income, so they're not really, it's not transparent to them how much their insurance actually costs. There's an equally large group of people who are outside of that benefit because their income's a little too high to benefit from it. And these guys are paying 100% of this cost out of their own pocket. And so as these benefits are tweaked and changed, the guys receiving the benefit really are okay. They don't know what's going on, and they're the lowest income folks, and that's all right. But the guys who pay for their own insurance just get hammered. And their insurance over the last 3 years has doubled in price because of the nature of the risk pool in the ACA that's been created. There have been some federal fixes that were available to the administration that were never taken up. We outlined them in great detail. The Blue Cross Association, we told them exactly how to fix it, exactly how to stabilize rates, exactly how to stop the runaway train, but we didn't get any traction. We're hoping that we'll get more traction because the Trump administration is talking to the Blue Cross Association, and hopefully they will pay more attention to these things they can do to stop the market from breaking down and keeping more carriers from walking away, which is always a problem.
877-217-5757 and jim@inkstershow.com. We'll return with more from Mike Berto of Blue Cross on the Louisiana Radio Network.
From novels to crime, politics, news, events, and the occasional stirring of the pot.
Treat people like you want to be treated.
Murderers, drug dealers who are illegal. You don't want them
you
to...
You have elected
this. This is the Jim Inkster Show on the Louisiana Radio Network.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your toll-free number for Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Louisiana. And you may reach us by email, jim@inkstershow.com. And a question from Tracy in Baton Rouge regarding sales across state lines. Is that ever going to happen, or is that a non-starter?
Well, the good news is it's already happened. You can already, any insurance company in the United States can sell into 6 states that have already passed laws that allow for across state line sales. One of them is Georgia. So, for example, if I owned an insurance company in Idaho.
Or Louisiana.
And I wanted to sell insurance in Georgia, then I could certainly call up their insurance commissioner and say, hey, I'd like to list some products there. Are you okay with that? And they would say, come on in. We're happy to have you. And you can even follow your own rules from Idaho into Georgia and get it done. Yet, after 4 years of that opportunity, not a single carrier has taken them up on it. So you might ask why. Well, the best way I can describe it is this. Health insurance, or let's back up a step, health care is a product that's typically delivered locally. In other words, if I have to have surgery on my broken leg, I probably want to have that surgery as close to home as possible. So when people seek health care, that care's the cost of it is controlled by the prevailing health care cost in that market. Carriers like Blue Cross, we negotiate with doctors and hospitals and labs and imaging centers to try to get the absolute best deal we can for our members. The leverage in that negotiation is size. So, for example, in Louisiana, when I go to speak to a doctor or a hospital, I go as a representative of 1 million members who have Blue Cross coverage in Louisiana. If I go to Atlanta and start negotiations there, how many members will I have to get a better deal, to leverage a better deal? I'll have none. And so the odds are I would have a very difficult time becoming price competitive because I don't have any leverage in that market. And since 85% of the cost of a health insurance policy is driven by medical costs, not taxes, not fees, not overhead, 85%, if I can't make a dent in that 85% cost structure, then there's no way I can sell insurance cheaper than the guys that are already there. So that kind of defines the battle across state lines. I'm skeptical that selling across state lines is going to make a big impact one way or the other. But, you know, if it happens, we'll support it. We'll figure out a way to make it go.
Well, right now in Louisiana, there aren't that many options under Obamacare, are there? How many are left?
Advantage Healthcare out of Monroe and Blue Cross today are the two carriers that were on the exchange for open enrollment 2017.
Any chance that one or both will drop away?
We are committed to this market, and we reevaluate constantly what's the best thing for our membership here in the state. But I can't predict whether Vantage or us will drop out of the market in the future because of all of the uncertainty that we discussed earlier, things like cost-sharing reductions. It's a big deal, that kind of uncertainty. But we remain committed to this market, this is our only territory. You know, we're in Louisiana. We don't fish in any other pond. We're committed to this state.
I know the number of consumers is a moving target, but how many are there now in our state?
How many?
For Blue Cross.
There are about 1.6 million human beings in Louisiana carrying a Blue Cross card.
So that's well over a third of the state.
Yes.
Well over a third,
yes.
Getting close to 40% of the state.
Yeah, and you know, it's my honor every day to know that those people trust us with their hard-earned treasure, you know, to make sure that when bad things happen to them, when their health is threatened, that they can focus on getting well and let us cover these gigantic medical bills that you can get nowadays.
And before the expansion of Medicaid under Governor John Bel Edwards, I'm reading from your blog, 1.4 million people were already on Medicaid in Louisiana, right?
Yes.
And that is of course, a big expense, but another 400,000 or so have been added? Is that the number?
Well, there's been a little cross-shifting. Some of the people in the old populations qualified for the new population. But I heard Dr. Gee say this morning there are over 1.6 million on Medicaid right
now. So about the same number as there are
about
on Blue Cross.
About the same as on Blue Cross, yes.
Blue Cross. But Blue Cross, there's probably no way you could handle that population because it's not as healthy, is it, as the 1.6 million that you are working with, or could I be wrong?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know that Medicaid's core group that they were built originally 50 years ago were the neediest of the needy, people who were blind and disabled and really, without Medicaid had no hope of getting health care, critical populations. That's where Medicaid got its start, as far as I can tell.
Mike Berto is the guest. We'll have him for one more segment, straighttalkla.com. If you'd like to go and peruse his information, which certainly is additional to what we're discussing here, but if you have a question, he's the man about health care. 877-217-5757 is your number, and we return in a few minutes on the Louisiana Radio Network.
Making Louisiana great again.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
This is the Jim Inkster Show.
On the Louisiana Radio Network.
Lou Ba.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Your number is 877-217-5757. Mike Berto, the chief healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield, is with us, and there could be another move regarding the attempted repeal and replacement of Obamacare, and that, of course, will change the world dramatically. But right now, it's a holding pattern with the Affordable Care Act still being the law of the land. Now, you have written about this, and through the last year or so, we've gotten quite a few people commenting about how there is a disparity between a person who is young, who pays a certain amount for health care, and a person who is old, who pays more. But that said, they don't pay more based on usage. Otherwise, the older people would be paying through the nose, and the younger people would be paying almost nothing. So some people believe that's inherently unfair. How do you respond to that, Mike?
The original ACA that was passed back in 2010 and went into effect in 2014, the feds were trying really hard through that bill to set up a single marketplace coast to coast and have the same rules for it, the benefits you had to cover, the way it was rated, and the way it was priced in every state, one individual market that went across those lines. And in that decision-making process, one of the things they decided was is that you would have an adult population from age 21 to 64 covered under the act, and that the age rating from the oldest member to the youngest member couldn't exceed 3-1. So for every dollar a 21-year-old paid for his coverage, right, the most a 64-year-old could pay was $3. And that was a ratio they settled on. Economically, what we've noticed is that in the real world, that 60 to 64-year-old cohort uses almost 7 times as much coverage as the 21-year-olds do. And if the rating was set something closer to that reality, say 5-1, rates for younger folks would go down significantly, and we think it might help balance the risk pool, bring in more young folks who are kind of staying away right now.
877-217-5757, Henry in Baton Rouge. Good afternoon, Henry. You're on the Jim Engster Show with Mike Berto. Hi, Henry. Emily.
Good afternoon, Mr. Jim. How are y'all doing today?
We're doing well.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, Mr. Jim, you picked some good guests. Mr. Mike, I got to tell you now, we all feel the same way about insurance companies. We hate them to death, but you're good at what you do. You're smoother than a peeled onion. I got a question for you.
I'm going to tell my wife you said that.
Well, you go right ahead, tell her you got that endorsement from old Henry. I got a question for you, though, serious business. On these high deductible insurance plans that have the HSAs associated with it?
Yes.
Is there any real talk, serious talk, stuff that might happen to expand the HSAs so that, you know, like as we get older and aren't able to get those high deductible plans, or where we could get a separate HSA?
That's an excellent question. In the bill that the Republicans were pushing a couple weeks ago, there was a large section about enhancing the value of health savings accounts. One of the features they wanted to change, let you use it to buy over-the-counter drugs. Today, if someone needs a large quantity of an over-the-counter drug, the only way they can get it paid for with their health savings account is if their physician will write a prescription for an over-the-counter drug, which is kind of crazy because then I've got to have a doctor visit to buy ibuprofen, which, you know, seems a little wasteful. They wanted to roll back some of the penalties. Sometimes one of the things that stops people from putting money in an HSA is, what if I have an emergency and I need to get my hands on that money? Right now, the penalty is 20%. So the bill suggested they roll that back to 10%. They also wanted to double the amount you could contribute to an HSA. Now that they understand that cost sharing and max out of pockets are much higher than they were 3 or 4 years ago, the old limits really didn't cover the cost you might incur once you had your health savings account rolling. So yes, there have been a lot of talk about improving HSAs and making them more powerful and more useful to people in our current cost environment. I think that's an excellent idea, and I hope it comes back in the next bill.
Phil in Baton Rouge. Good afternoon, Phil. You're on the Jim Engster Show with Mike Berto. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. Yes, sir. First of all, what is the median income for the population of Louisiana. My point is you kind of have to have enough of an income to put aside what I think is about like $12,000 to $14,000 a year for the average insurance company policy. And the other question I have is, do you know about risk corridors and a set of funding that was set up to cover the insurance company's losses when, you know, the Puerto Rico app is expensive. So can you talk about the risk corridors?
Yeah, those are excellent points. The average income in Louisiana, last I checked, was around household was around $42,000 or $43,000 for a family of three people. And if you're at $43,000 for a family of three, you're solidly in the middle of the benefits of the ACA. You can buy health insurance with tax credits, with cost sharing reductions at that income level. So that's average. Whether you could afford a policy depends on exactly how old the people in your household are, but you will be in a position to shop on healthcare.gov and get federal assistance at the average income in Louisiana. The second question, risk corridors were set up just to help insurance companies manage the risk of insuring a huge new population, many of which had never had insurance in their life. We knew they would have huge amounts of pent-up demand, and that when we allowed them into the risk pools and started covering their expenses, it would be very expensive to start with. Nobody knew exactly how expensive, and to be honest, we underestimated just how sick that population would be. And so we've been on this kind of mission over the last few years to try to get our rates to go up fast enough to break even on the individual population. And we're not there yet. In 16, we did not break even on the individual marketplace, although the losses were smaller than in 15. Risk corridors were set up so that as an insurance company started to lose money, a program would fund some of the losses. It wouldn't fund all of it, and it didn't start funding until you lost quite a bit of money. But this conversation is actually kind of moot, because Congress had to actually appropriate money for the risk corridor program, which they have never done. So even if I have a line on the federal balance that says Blue Cross in Louisiana is owed whatever, $100 million, I don't know the real number, you know, we're not holding our breath waiting to recover it. But it would be extremely helpful if that money comes down, rate increases will go down.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist, Blue Cross, and his blog again is straighttalkla.com. And hopefully we'll hear from Mike again very soon on the Louisiana Radio Network, as in next month. But we're back after this pause on the Louisiana Radio Network.
Politics junkie?
Press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him?
You're in the right place.
No, I wish you were in high school. I could take him behind the gym.
The Jim Engster Show.
That's what I wish.
On the Louisiana Radio Network.
This is Jim Engster. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 39 today to close at 20,689, and the NASDAQ ahead 3 points, finishing at 58.98. In our hour to come, we are slated to hear from Garrett Graves, congressman from the Baton Rouge area, representing much of South Louisiana, with some thoughts about where the flood money is headed. Now, is it on its way? The much-needed assistance to people who were slammed hard by the historic flooding of 2016, and we'll talk with Congressman Graves about a few other matters as well, I'm sure, and we're slated to hear from a whistleblower who really has quite a story to tell. It was front page cover story of the Business Report Swamp Tale. His name is Dan Collins. You'll want to hear his story. That coming in our other hour. Stay tuned.